Let me invite you to just take a few nice deep breaths, and if it's comfortable, to just allow your eyes to close or to remain open, but just in a soft focus. And just breathe and come into stillness. And as you breathe in, allowing your body to relax, your back to remain upright, and allowing yourself to be seated, to be grounded in the chair that's holding you, gravity that's holding you to the earth. And with each in-breath, maybe thinking of taking your seat. Taking your place in the unfolding of life here and now. Perhaps being reminded that you already belong here, just as you are, just because you are. And that there's absolutely nothing to do, nothing to fix or change, or maybe even understand, but simply to receive, to be. And as that in-breath grounds you and centers you, maybe thinking of the out-breath or allowing the out-breath to open your heart, allowing your heart to soften, allowing the heart maybe to be a bit more unprotected and undefended. And allowing yourself to have that strong back and that soft front. And as your heart opens, can you accept what's present for you now, just as it is? Perhaps it's peace. Perhaps it's anxiety, sadness, anger, disappointment. Rumi says, as we open the door of our hearts to welcome all the guests with laughter and joy, with love and compassion, all the thoughts, all the feelings can be just as they are and met with love and compassion. And then just taking a moment to notice how it is to simply be. Allowing yourself to be. Because love is not something that is manipulated or controlled or possessed. Love is simply an invitation to presence. And then just taking a moment to allow your awareness to come back to your breath. Maybe tuning again to the sounds, the presence of other beings that are here. And then as you're ready, just gently opening your eyes and returning to the room. thank you. Thank you, Ben, Julie. These songs are just really perfect for today. I really appreciate it. That last song, you know, open your heart and let the Christ light flow in the context of power. Power is not something to go out and get and grab and hold on to. Paradoxically, power is found when we soften, when we open and receive the power that's already here. So if you can just park that thought, because I want to just share a few other thoughts before we come back to that and get into the heart of the message today. I'm really excited about the summer. Summer's here. Isn't it nice what a difference a year makes? Or a year, a week. Yeah. Last week I was here shivering, you know, feeling like it was December, and now today it's like, okay, summer in North Idaho has returned, and it's just beautiful, isn't it? It's just beautiful. This is just God's country, and I love all the seasons that are here. And one of the things I like about summer, and what I hope will be helpful to you, is going to be an opportunity for you to hear, for us to hear from a variety of voices over the course of the summer. So today you'll hear from me. Next week I'm really excited to partner with Greg Anderton. Greg is a member of our church who hosts our Power of Eight group, and we're going to talk about sacred masculinity. And I really have, as we've gotten to know each other, I think really complement each other in this idea of masculinity and just reflecting on that. And then the next week, July 19th, Susie Weller is going to be here, and she's going to be talking about the sacred feminine, the divine feminine, through the eyes of Mary Magdalene. And I can't wait. I'll be out of town at a retreat in Victoria, B.C., but I'm a Mary Magdalene geek, and so I'm really looking forward to hearing what she has to say. The week after that is July 26th, and Reverend Jeff Tawney of Unity North Spokane and I are going to be doing what we call a pulpit swap. So he will be here speaking, and I will be at his congregation in North Spokane speaking. So I've never done that before, but I'm really looking forward to it. I hear that sometimes that's been done with Unity ministers here, so I'm really, really excited about that. Let's see, the week after that, August 1st, yeah, you just get me, it'll be boring. and then the week after that, August 9th, Ernie Hawks is going to be speaking, and I'm so, so excited. I just adore Ernie. I just love going to his house and where it is out in nature. He's written an amazing book, and his ability to tell stories about nature and take, sometimes when we talk about God and nature and all that kind of stuff, it can get very philosophical, it can get very esoteric, it can get very ooey-gooey and in the clouds and all that kind of stuff, and Ernie just writes with a groundedness and a common senseness that just enriches me, so I'm really excited for him to be speaking. So that takes us out for the next few weeks. So I just am really looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to this being a rich, rich season of growth. All right? Are we good? All right. Back to today, Sunday, July 5th. I've been looking forward to this day for a long time, knowing that it was going to be the day after the 4th of July. Many of us here, I know, are probably recovering from fireworks and overeating and staying up late and all that kind of stuff. But the reflections that I want to share come from a deep, deep, deep love that I have for this community and a deep, deep love that I have for our country. Like I told you my story last night, going out on the boat and just jamming out to, you know, some of the great American tunes about this. You know, it runs very, very deep in me. And I know that I may present as like some woke Seattle liberal, but you need to know, and today you may see, that underneath that shell or veneer is someone who's deeply, deeply conservative. And for reasons that I hope will be clear, you may know where some of the reasons I've parted ways with conservatism today, as it's become kind of, in my opinion, overly blended with Christianity. So this is where it comes into perfect alignment with what we're doing here right now. We've been in this series of messages called Exploring the Christ Way. Another word for Christ could be exploring the way of love, because that was the way of Christ. That was the way of Jesus. And so I want to begin by showing you. You remember, if you were here last week, my friend Mark Bauman spoke. So we were texting pictures yesterday. He was at his parade, and I was at my parade here going back and forth. He lives was at his cabin on Vashon Island, which is just across Puget Sound from Seattle. And he sent me this image that I thought was perfect. so I told him I was going to share this. I don't know if you can read the sign there, but it says, "The only thing more powerful than hate is love." The only thing more powerful than hate is love. And I think you would all agree with that. And yet, if that's the case, why is there so much hate and so much polarization and so much fear in our country? I think a clue to that could be of the nuance and the difference between the love of power and the power of love. I hope you can just hold that as we go throughout this morning today, the difference in the feeling and the energy between the power of love and the love of power. I think that can be something for us that can ground us and calm us and center us. Abraham Lincoln was asked during the Civil War if he thought God was on his side. And I'll never forget when I read his answer. It's one of these things that sticks with me, but I want to share it with you this morning. He said this, "Sir, my concern is not whether God is on our side. My greatest concern is to be on God's side, for God is always right." Think about that. How would your life change if you shifted from thinking about, is God on my side, or am I on God's side? There's a humility that's there. There's an openness that's there that I find very attractive. I think we could say it this way. When we seek to have God on our side, it divides. If I take a side and then beseech God to take my side, what that implies is God's not on the other person's side. If Peter and I are talking about something here, and I say, all right, Peter, God's on my side, the implication, whether it's meant it or not, is, well, maybe God isn't on his side. But rather, here's the good news, seeking to be on God's side unites. Seeking, what's that? Amen, my friend, and you can get me going down a rabbit trail on that. In fact, I will just a little bit. Here's... Yes, God is already on our side. Like it or not, God is already on your side. It says that God has chosen us before the foundation of time to love. So there's not a thing you could do or I can do to make God love us any differently, more or less. That decision in the divine mind of things has already been made up. And so many of us have images of God as this something way out there in the sky. I've got to resist myself here to go too far down this rabbit trail. But some that has to be appeased or has to be atoned or has to be found. No. The journey of the spiritual life is coming back to the receiving of it. It's coming back to accepting that you and I are already accepted. I think I shared this last night, but sometime when we talk more about hell. What if the flames of hell were the fires of God's love that we cannot or will not accept or receive? Now again, that's not in a punitive, oh, you better watch out or you're going to go to this place when you die, but in the unfolding of life, that's how things are. All right. Andrew Reed and James Matheson were two preachers from England who came to America in the early 1800s, 1815, 1830, just to see what's going on in this new country. We'd only been, you know, less than 50 years going at this, you know, and so these preachers from England came over to just see. And after touring America a few years, they said this, "America will be great if America is good. If not, her greatness will vanish away like a morning cloud." Let me read this again. America will be great if America is good. If not, her greatness will vanish away like the morning cloud.
Is that before we killed off all the buffalo to start up the Indians?
Thank you, Peter. I like how you're thinking. But I want us to think about America's greatness and goodness. I had an opportunity this week to settle into the greatness and goodness of Coeur d'Alene. How can you not love being at that parade yesterday and just seeing the many, many people who came out? I thought about, you know, those who maybe didn't want to or couldn't or whatever. You know, so we got to be careful to realize that it's not true for everybody. Last Sunday, a week ago, my new friend from here, Miller, who's Larry Belmont's son, took me to a place called the Long Ear Record Store. Do you know it? Okay. It was awesome. Because I guess that store is closing down after so many years of being here or whatever. 50 years of being here, yeah. So I walked in, he took me there, and this band called P.S. I Love You was playing. Do you know that group? Yeah, yeah. And I just sat there and was just immersed. And I just started thinking, I wonder if there's something here that describes the heart and soul of this community. Quick P.S. for Judith Pinkerton's music workshop, okay? If you haven't taken it, take it. I think it's the 27th, right? Not the September 27th is a ways off, all right? But the power of music to define and unpack a culture was something. But the vibrancy and the spirit that was there and the people in the community who packed this little record store out on a Sunday afternoon, a beautiful one, to hear this band play was just palpable to me. I thought, wow, it's amazing. It's thriving. Yesterday, or last week, I had a chance to spend a couple days back in Seattle with my kids and grandkids. Had a wonderful time. And as I was driving in bumper-to-bumper traffic on I-5, I had the quick thought, oh, I don't miss this. Although, I did have the experience of driving north on 95 up to Hayden. Oh, by the way, I bought a new bike, so my friend Miller helped me buy a new bike so that I can think I can maybe do the Ironman next year. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But anyway, I experienced a little bit of bumper-to-bumper traffic here, nothing like it was back there. But it was funny because the thought came to me, you know what? Seattle is thriving too. Look at the throngs of people that are here doing life. I mean, if it was dead and dying and awful and going to hell in a handbasket, why are there so many people, you know? Why is Coeur d'Alene growing and North Idaho growing? I talked to some people at the parade yesterday, been here 40 years, and they were lamenting, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, this place wasn't half as crowded 40 years ago as it is today. And it's just funny what your frame of reference is, because to me, this is a small town, but, you know, it's to when your frame of reference and growth is there. But think about it again in terms of growth, in terms of thriving, and in terms of acknowledging greatness. I'm going to get a little sassy with you here, so just understand that this comes from a heart of love. If I were to wear a hat today that said, make unity great again. Peter, you like that? There you go. I just want you to know that your minister is not here because he thinks unity needs to be made great again. And if that's your consciousness, I want to just lovingly challenge it. Take me out for a nice cup of coffee or a good glass of wine, and we can talk about it. I'm here because I think unity is great, and I want to do what little bit I can with the skills and impact that I have to make it even better. So, too, I believe with all my heart that America is and always has been and, God willing, always will be a great country. And I want to do everything in my power and everything in my ability to make our country better. Can you see? It's a difference in consciousness. Something that is full and thriving and abundant. Let's make it better. We have a wonderful gathering here on Sunday mornings. We also have during the week a group called Spiritual Evolution, a group called New Testament Introduction, a group called God and Coffee, and numerous AA groups that meet throughout the week. And the spiritual vitality and the spiritual pulse beat is palpable here. And I love it. I love, love, love it. And as I told you last week, well, I'll get to that in a minute, but the strength and the passion and the vibrancy here is amazing. I know some of you that have been here a long time. Remember when we had two services and this image of things going and all that kind of stuff? Yes, 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 that's wonderful. But I don't think that's ever been lost. In fact, I don't think there's a thing in the universe that can take that away. Rather, I want to live in that and party in that and celebrate and see what God wants to do. Here's the thought. Oh, this is a good one. Thich Nhat Hanh said this: the next Buddha will be the Sangha. The next Buddha will be the Sangha. Reverend James, what in the heck does this have to do with what you've been talking about? Do you know what Sangha means? Okay, I'm so glad you asked that. Sangha is a Sanskrit word used in Buddhism to refer to an assembly, a gathering, a community. Is there another word we could associate with that? Huh? Church. Yes. What would happen if we called this Unity Sangha of Spiritual Growth? Some of you would go, oh, wow, that's kind of cool and sexy. I'll go check that out, right? Why is it then that we have this allergy to the word church? Oh, don't call our name church. Or in fact, let's sanitize it and not call it anything, you know? The power of a name. But I want you to really feel into what Thich Nhat Hanh said here. The next Buddha is going to be a Sangha, a community, an assembly, a gathering, a church. Call it what you want. I don't care. But I love his shift in consciousness from one person, the guru, who dispenses all wisdom and knowledge, hogwash. In fact, it was never that way, to the consciousness of a community. That's what I love about this. That's what I love about Coeur d'Alene. That's what I love about Idaho. It's what I love about the Pacific Northwest. It's what I love about America. It's what I love about the world. To hell with all the stupid borders and names and labels and things that we put on each other. To hell with them all. We are a vibrant expression of love and community. And what a joy to be on the ride together. Yes? Yes. Okay. Now, back to America. And I want to deal with this idea of America as a Christian nation. In my former world, I've told you that I started off my ministry at what was then the largest church in the state of Washington, a conservative evangelical congregation. 6,000 members, 6 weekly services. So I'm not averse, and I don't not know how to do multiple services. So if you think that, I do. And every year we would hold a God and Country service. And my favorite moment of that service every year, it moved me to tears, was a song. We had a 200-voice choir and a 60-piece orchestra, and we would run a medley of all 5 armed services songs, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, and Coast Guard. And we would invite those who have served or had formerly served or are currently serving in each one of those armed services to come forward to the front and be recognized. And it was moving. I was just overwhelmed with just tears of honor and wonder, you know, for the men and women who give their lives in service of this thing called America. We had Vietnam veterans who said it was the first time they felt like someone acknowledged or thanked them for their service. But then something really subtle started to shift. And I don't think it was conscious. I don't know that it was intentional. I think it was well-meaning. But in all our enthusiasm for that, we started to make all this assumption that all these soldiers were Christian. And they all died in the service of Jesus. That Jesus was the only one who had this message of freedom and liberation and all that kind of stuff. And there was one year we were even so audacious to get a video greeting from then Vice President Dan Quayle, who patted us on the back and said, "We salute Overlake Christian Church for your work and, you know, keeping America great." And it was at that time that my attachment to that conservatism started to crack. Because as I was reading the Bible, I wasn't getting that. And the way of love and the way of Jesus to do that. Why? This is from our Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be what? No. We hold these truths to be sacred. We hold these truths to be godly. We hold these truths to be biblical. We hold these truths to be Christian. You see, conservatives will throw rocks at liberals saying, "Oh, you guys are just wishy-washy and want to change words and, you know, change the meaning of things or whatever." I was sharing this earlier this week with a group of friends who actually said, yeah, we believe self-evident is wrong. It needs to be more tied to God and sacred. And I had a little fun with them, because I said, okay, you're the one who said these are guys who think that I twist the Bible and make it say all these things to, you know, all that kind of stuff, all right? Word choice is important. We hold these truths to be self-evident. It's just the way these things are. Now, I wasn't there when they penned these words, but I am willing to bet my life that that choice of words was made intentionally. Knowing what I did of people freeing religious nationalism in their countries in Europe and setting up here a nation that is free. They didn't do that. I also have a clue. Let's see, do I have a thing under that? Yeah. So what that means for us is we think about the religions that are there, we can value connection over being correct. It ties back to what I said earlier about, is God on my side or am I on God's side? If God is on your side, you got to fight to hold and defend that position because you're correct. If you seek to be on God's side, you can challenge your beliefs and allow your assumptions to be questioned for the sake of connection and community, knowing that we're all a part of God's community. Okay? I know this was I'm going to come back to this. I know this was an issue because the First Amendment of our Constitution dealt with this. You see, here's the interesting thing. It can take a matter of days, weeks, or months to get pioneers out of the religious oligarchy of Europe and settled into this free land of America. It could take a lifetime, it could take generations to get the religion out of them. And no doubt, I think, there might have been forces that were seeking to make Christianity the official religion of America. So, Congress said in the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of blank. What goes in there? Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, to me, this isn't rocket science, okay? Let's keep religion out of government, and let's keep government out of religion. What does that mean? It's nuanced. Is America a Christian nation? Or is America a nation inhabited by Christians who, newsflash, happen to be the vast majority, and Muslims, and Jews, and Hindus, and Buddhists, and Native American, and atheists, and agnostics? I land on that side. But there's a lot of juju in this part of the world that waves the American flag with Jesus on it and crosses and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not here to judge that. I'm just here to say be careful. Be careful. Because I think the spirit of this land acknowledges that. And part of what we're seeing today is coming back to who we really are. The same thing applies for this community. Is unity a unity congregation? Or is unity a spiritual sangha? Right? You know, I don't know, but here's what I think. Well, I'll go to the next thing here, all right? As we move forward, let's live our principles and values forward by asking new questions in new ways. New wine must be put into new wineskins. So, shifting from America and what's happening there, I think there are new wineskins. You know, there's a new wave of love and community and being a nation that comes. We can hold on tenaciously to this view of America that we have from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, you know. As we think about unity in this community here, we can hold on to the wineskins of the glory days of the 80s and the 90s and, you know, whatever that was. Or we can take our attention off the skin and onto the wine. Any good wine lovers in here? I saw that smile very. Yeah, or coffee, or tea, or whatever you want to call it, okay? But Jesus said that new wine has to be put into new wineskins. Why? Because the old wineskin will burst. It was something that the people of his day were very familiar with. Same thing here. as we continue to open ourselves up to the wind and the waves of how Spirit is working, can we allow our grip on whatever wineskin? This is just something to reflect on. You know, I mean, you can reflect on it for our church, you can reflect on our country, you can reflect on it in your own life. What wineskin of my life am I holding on to that keeps me from receiving the fullness of love that's right around me here today? I want to show you an image now just to kind of bring this to life, to show you how this is working out in my life. I had my first experience with AI-generated images this week. I got to tell you, it's scary.
It is.
It's scary. But I asked AI to replicate an image of something I saw here 2 weeks ago after the Ironman. I was down at the, after church, I went down to the park and watched the racers finish the Ironman and was just so inspired. And then as I was walking along Front Street back to my apartment, you know those bronze statues that are there on Front Street by McEwen Park? You know, they've got their images of miners and some of the, you know, people who were in that area. And then there's this statue of a woman saying, "Give women the right to vote." You know the one I'm talking about? So what I want to show you is an AI image. I was too chicken and too shocked by what I saw to take a picture of it myself, of what I saw. But I saw a woman standing next to that image that this is 99% accurate of what I saw. And this is the scary part about AI is like you tell it what you want and oh my gosh. So it's this.
She fought for us women to vote. And she's like, "No." And I'm like, "Okay. Have it your way."
You're kind of, yeah, some of you are reacting like, you know, I did. So as it turned out, this week when I was back in Seattle, I think I've told you that my son is joining the Eastern Orthodox Church. He left the church. I was in Ethiopia. Okay, these guys make Donald Trump look like a communist. They're so conservative. And I thought, okay, let me hear what these guys have to say about that. So I showed them this image. Didn't faze them in the least. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. There's a growing segment out there. Especially of the younger generation. And this is where we need to have our ears tuned to the younger generation, the generation that's coming up, okay? Us here, we're getting kind of, most of us, not all of us, but most of us here are getting old, all right? I want my ears, and I try to keep my ears really tuned to the younger generation, and I also work the fringes, okay? I like to be out on the edges of the people that aren't a part of the center of the community and just hear what they're saying. So my little research project told me that, yes, there are a group of people who believe that women's suffrage undermined the sense of democracy that we have in our country, having been reminded that we are not a pure democracy. We don't vote on everything, right? I mean, we couldn't. It's impossible. We elect representatives who vote on our behalf. We're really a socialist, democratic republic. And there's a questioning of, did women's suffrage shift from families voting, families, the traditional family, which is male, female, okay? And then they'll argue that it's the bedrock of our culture, one vote represented to that, to now breaking that all apart, and now it's the individual who can vote. And so if we're going to really return to the pure sense of what our democracy is in, we should look again at women's suffrage. Second thing that I learned is that prior to women's suffrage, in the early days, well, what they asked is voting a privilege or is voting a right? Is voting a privilege or is voting a right? I ask, what if it's both? What if it's both? To be eligible to vote in this country early on, you had to do two things. One, pay taxes, and two, be drafted. Be willing to be drafted. And so as our you know, for people voting and all this kind of stuff did it, you know. So as I was kicking it around with my son and his friends, I said, okay, all right, can a woman serve in the military? And this is why I'm excited to spend the next 2 weeks unpacking masculine and feminine. because there's a growing segment in our younger populations of, I've told you, the manosphere or masculinism that believes feminism somehow emasculates masculinity. And so there's this drive to return to letting men be men and boys be boys. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of it here. I've seen more oversized pickup trucks and gun racks and all this kind of stuff, you know, dude up. And again, I get it, all right? I do CrossFit. I love to pick shit up and throw it down and get dirty and get messy. You know, I love to live in, you know, the man world. But is there more to masculinity than being tough? You know, I think there is. But again, I'm thankful. I'm thankful for the congregation. I'm thankful for the discomfort that these conversations have, because I think it's going to take us into back to everything that I just got done saying ahead of time, a new sense of our connection to one another. If we have to be willing to sit with the discomfort. Because when I saw this, I thought, you know what? A woman's right to vote is something I would die for. Now, if a family is here, you know, and a couple is here, and a wife wants to say, yes, my husband is the voice of our family, and I trust him to represent me in our divorce, that's great. You do you. This is America. You're free to do that. But to overarch that and make it applicable and to force it on every woman in this country by way of law or reamendment of our Constitution, I might just give my life for that. Because I think the human rights and dignity and everything that our country was founded on was equality. But can you understand that I think in these days to come, this could get really messy and really tense. And I think the people that are going to lead the way are not going to be politicians. It's not. It's not going to be news organizations, because news organizations play on our fears. They play on your fear and mine. I don't care what shade of red or what shade of blue you are. Just follow your Facebook feed and YouTube feed and news feed. Everything plays on your fears. Why? They don't care about you being fear. What do they care about? Money. And so they're going to tap into your fear. Why? Because you're going to click on it. And every click that you make on something represents dollars and cents to them. That's why I deactivated all of my social media. I've told you this before. Everything. LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. You're not going to find me anywhere out there. And I'll tell you, I haven't missed it. And I'm not trying to say that as some pious guy, you know, in the sky who's got all this stuff done. But this is the kind of stuff that's there. And I'm sobered by issues like this, but I also welcome them. And I hope that we can have the wherewithal to, like, okay, let's unpack this and see what Spirit's doing. So, I love this Richard Rohr quote, back to God. We don't come to God by doing it right. We come to God by doing it wrong. Just let that soak for a minute. We don't come to God by doing it right. We come to God by doing it wrong. Because it's in our wrongness that if our hearts and soft are open, we find mercy, we find grace, and we find love. In the book, My Grandmother's Hands, they talk about clean pain and dirty pain. Clean pain and dirty pain. Clean pain is pain that is pain that's been processed, it's been metabolized, it's been touched, and it's been owned. Dirty pain is the stuff that lurks in the shadows. I don't want to go there. I can't go there. It's too tough and it's too difficult. And the problem is there's no denying it. It just runs in the background as a shadow, as part of your operating system. And dirty pain, it not only does it not get processed, it gets projected onto other people, other things, other political parties, other churches, other religions, and other faiths. So we can think of it this way. When we hide from our wounds, we hide from our wisdom. When we hide from our wounds, we hide from our wisdom. Something that I hope we can continue to grow into as a community here is a church that's loving and strong enough to hold our wounds. And the pathway to dealing with our wounds is grief. It's grief. When we can allow ourselves to be moved to tears, when we can touch grief, behind that grief, we find a love that can sustain and hold and remake us in a new way. We're getting late on time, so I'm not going to read this to you, but the song, there was a song that inspired this whole message today by Bob Dylan, Is God on Our Side? And it's basically in the lyrics, he just kind of runs through all of American history. And it's one of those songs that, for me, has that energy of self-examination and taking an honest look again. And as we think of the joy and the blessing of being able to live in this country here, can we do so with a courage and a humility and a resilience to stay in the game and watch what happens? Because that's what I want to do. That's what I'm excited to do. Amen? Amen. Amen. Thank you for listening.